So for animal locomotion, acquiring a load can limit performance. This is especially interesting for flying animals, which often catch their prey while on the wing and often will have to carry that prey back to a safe place to eat it, or perhaps to waiting young. Many animals also mate while flying and perform a lot of other behaviors that involve carrying a load while flying. This brings to light a very important question in the field of flight biomechanics, and that is, what is the maximum load an animal can carry while flying? Or, phrased another way, what is the maximum vertical force that an animal can produce? And I'm interested in social insects and chose the bumblebee system to explore this question because they're an ideal species or group that I'll get to for reasons I'll get to in a minute. Assessing maximum vertical force production is critical for predicting acceleration, which is important, has important ecological and behavioral relevance for behaviors such as escape, predation, mating, and others. And it's also important for learning about allometry of force production. But several methods exist for testing maximum vertical force. So before we can answer this important question, we must first ask, how do different methods for measuring maximum vertical force production compare? There are two main methods for doing this that are called the cumulative method and the asymptotic method. In the cumulative method, first popularized by Martin in an amazing paper where he tested several species of insects, birds, and bats using this method, you take an animal and attach, either by glue or tape, a weight. He used about 20% of the body mass, then release the animal and see if it can fly. And if it does leave the ground, then you grab it again, attach another weight, and release again and see if it can fly. Eventually, you'll reach a point where you've attached a mass that is so much the animal can't leave the ground. And then you take the average of the entire mass of the animal with weight before it could, when it could leave the ground, and when it couldn't leave the ground, take the average, multiply by gravitational acceleration, and you have maximum vertical force. In this study, they found that vertical force increased isometrically with increasing mass of the organism across all these various taxa. It was a very influential paper. I checked just last week on the Web of Science, and it's been cited 147 times and did a lot to spur research into the field of flight biomechanics. Another method is called the asymptotic method, and in this you take an animal and tie a string around it somewhere. For an insect, the pedicel area is pretty convenient. And attached on this string are little weights of a known mass. And then you can release the animal and it'll fly up, and as it does so, it'll be lifting more and more and more continuous mass until it reaches an asymptote, which is the maximum mass that the animal can fly and carry. So then you take the animal as it's hovering at this maximum, and you take its mass along with the mass it's lifted that comes from the string and the beads, multiply by gravitational acceleration, and you can get the maximum vertical force this way. This has been done in a few different studies with hummingbirds, but it's also was conducted with 11 species of orchid bees in this paper by Dillon and Dudley, and they found a negative allometry for maximum vertical force production. So looking at these two different techniques and the different findings they found, I wanted to do a more thorough investigation of the differences between these two types of ways of getting at vertical force production. And I chose to do this in bumblebees. Bombus impatiens. And these are a great system to explore this, especially when looking at allometry, because bumblebees, at least in this species, impatiens, displays a fourfold variation in mass of adults. So what I did was I took these bumblebees and, using both methods, tested for vertical force production and looked at allometric relationships and compared differences. So what did I find? Well, just looking at maximum vertical force, the cumulative method, or the glue-on-weights method, significantly underestimated maximum vertical force compared to the asymptotic method, or the beaded string method. And because I used different groups of bees to test the different techniques, I wanted to make sure there wasn't any sort of sampling bias. So I looked at the thoracic mass of these two groups of bees and found no significant difference. Looking at allometry, here's a figure from that first paper using the glued mass technique. And they found isometry when looking at the allometry in this work. So on a log-log scale, looking at vertical force versus flight muscle mass, the exponent of this slope is 1, whereas with the orchid bee paper, the exponent was significantly less than 1. In my work, testing the same species both ways, I found very similar results. Using the cumulative method, the glued mass method, I found isometry where the exponent here is not different from 1, whereas using the string method, significantly less than 1. Looking at mass-specific vertical force, Martin's paper found a positive relationship with vertical force per body mass versus flight muscle, whereas the Dillon and Dudley paper found either no relationship for body mass specific and a decreasing relationship for flight muscle mass specific vertical force. I found, replicating these techniques, the same result using the cumulative method, a positive result, and no significant relationship for the asymptotic method. So in summary, the cumulative method underestimates maximum vertical force compared to the asymptotic method. Also, the cumulative method and the asymptotic method show different conclusions regarding allometry of force production and allometry of mass-specific vertical force. Additionally, the asymptotic method has other advantages. The load is applied much closer to the center of mass, and gluing on weights to the abdomen or legs, such as was done in the Martin study, may affect vertical force production in the directly vertical direction. You also avoid ground effects using the asymptotic method. Generating forces in the boundary layer can significantly affect the maximum forces. So testing an animal while it's hovering above the ground, it probably does a better job at getting at the maximum. What may be going on here is actually examining forces in two very different behaviors, and that might explain some of these different results. Actually, we're kind of looking at hovering above ground versus takeoff, and there may be different forces involved at takeoff versus hovering. But if we want to just ask the question of what is the maximum an animal can produce, it looks like using the asymptotic method and examining hovering might give us a higher maximum. And finally, with the asymptotic method, you can directly examine other important aspects of flight kinematics because you're looking at an animal while it's hovering. You can get data about wing beat frequency and other sort of kinematic data, whereas you're not just kind of making an estimation of a value between two different states, the takeoff state or the flying state and the sedentary state. Well, what does all this mean? For my data with bumblebees, I found that the average maximum load they can carry was 53% of their body weight. In a study with the closely related honeybees, Feuerbacher et al. Found that nectar foraging honeybees carry, on average, 40% of their body weight in nectar. So if, in fact, honeybees are like bumblebees, well then foragers may be loading at only 75% of the maximum that they can carry. Which I guess makes sense, because if you're trying to fly back to the hive with a full honey crop, you may need to escape a bird, or you may get hit by a raindrop and still might need to make your way home, and you might need a little bit of reserve energy to make it. So with that, I'd like to acknowledge National Science Foundation, the Dudley Lab, and Copper Biological, and these were the references used in this study. Any questions? Go ahead.
I guess I was curious why you picked inpatient study, because it's on the West Coast, is between Washington and Seattle.
Yeah, I chose them purely for the convenience of being able to order them from Copper Biological. You can't get Western species from Copper anymore because of the difficulty of raising Occidentalis. That was why.
So, is it possible that you may be perhaps underestimating the load carrying capacity of honeybees. You know, in a behavior called undertaking, if you put a dead bee right on the colony, one, they'll often try to nudge it away, but occasionally they'll actually pick it up and fly away with it and drop it somewhere.
No, that's true. I mean, I was looking at bumblebee maximum force, and, you know, they're compared to relative to wing size, bumblebees are much more massive relative to their wings than honeybees. The previous study, Feuerbacher et al., just looked at pollen foraging and honey foraging. So it's true that honeybees may very well be able to carry much higher generate higher vertical forces than even in that study.
Something like Species, right, which is a cicada killer wasp, honeybee size, or bumblebee size, right, several hundred milligrams, and they actually carry something that's heavier than them, and I'm wondering if perhaps just for their size,
Yeah, that just may be the case. I mean, there are some orchid bees that can carry almost three times their own weight. So it's very curious. Bumblebee flight is an interesting system where they're almost at their maximum, just carrying their own body weight around. So it's a really good system to explore this issue in. Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.